Ever think about just how much goes into getting something shipped from like halfway across the world?
Oh, absolutely.
It's mind-boggling, really, all those moving parts.
Yeah, and when it goes wrong, it can go really wrong.
And today's case is a perfect example of that.
That's right, we're diving into Norfolk Southern Railway Convey Kirby.
A case that ended up all the way in the Supreme Court.
And it all boils down to this question of who's liable when things go sideways in these really complex shipping contracts.
So let's break it down, start with the basics.
Okay, sounds good.
We have an Australian company, Kirby. They need to ship a big piece of machinery all the way to Alabama.
Okay, big move.
So they hire ICC, a freight forwarder,
These guys are basically the travel agents of the cargo world.
to handle everything door to door.
Right, make it easy for Kirby.
ICC then brings in Hamburg Süd
A German shipping company.
to handle the ocean part of the journey.
Makes sense.
And once the cargo hits Savannah,
Right, port city.
Hamburg Süd subcontracts the inland leg to Norfolk Southern, a rail company.
Okay, last mile.
Seems pretty straightforward,
Yeah,
right?
so far so good.
But here's where the train literally goes off the rails.
Uh-oh.
During that inland journey, the train derails,
Oh no.
causing about $1.5 million in damage to Kirby's machinery.
Wow, so now what? Who pays for that?
That's exactly the million-dollar question, or in this case, the $1.5 million question.
Yeah, it gets complicated.
So we've got multiple companies involved, a tangled web of contracts. It sounds like a game of contractual hot potato.
Pretty much, and at each step, there are these things called bills of lading.
Bills of lading. Okay, for those of us who haven't spent much time in the shipping world,
Sure.
what are those exactly?
It's basically a receipt and a contract kind of rolled into one.
Okay, multi-purpose.
And both ICC's and Hamburg Süd's bills of lading included something called a Himalaya clause.
Himalaya clause.
Yeah, have you heard of that before?
It rings a bell, but give us a refresher.
Well, imagine it like a shield
Okay, a shield.
that protects subcontractors, like Norfolk Southern in this case, from taking on too much liability.
Even though they weren't directly hired by the company that owns the cargo.
Exactly.
Okay, but Kirby never actually had a contract with Norfolk Southern, right?
Right.
So that doesn't seem fair, being bound by a contract you never signed.
And to make things even more complicated, the ICC Bill of Lading mentioned CAGSA,
COGSA, another acronym.
Carriage of Goods by Sea Act,
Ah, okay, got it.
which basically sets a default liability limit of $500 per container.
$500.
Per container.
But we're talking about $1.5 million in damages.
I know, right?
That's a pretty big gap.
Huge.
So no wonder this ended up in court.
Absolutely.
So walk us through how this whole legal battle played out.
Okay, so first stop, District Court in Georgia.
Okay, makes sense.
And they actually sided with Norfolk Southern.
So they upheld that limited liability from the bills of lading.
They did.
But I bet Kirby wasn't going to let it go just like that.
Oh, you know, they appealed.
Where'd they go next?
Up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals.
And?
And get this, they reversed the decision,
Wow, really?
said since Kirby and Norfolk Southern never had a direct contract, Kirby shouldn't be stuck with those limitations.
So, round one to Kirby.
It would seem so.
But I have a feeling this isn't over yet.
Oh no, this is just the beginning.
Where does it go from there?
Well, things escalate pretty quickly. I mean, we've got these clashing interpretations of the law, the potential impact this could have on, international shipping as a whole.
Yeah, good deal.
Huge. And it all leads to the case landing on the doorstep of the Supreme Court.
Wow, talk about a legal showdown.
Right.
What did the highest court in the land have to say about all this? All right, so the Supreme Court, what happened?
So they overturned the 11th Circuit's decision.
Oh, wow, so they sided with Norfolk Southern.
Yeah, they did.
That's a pretty big turnaround. Why? What was their thinking?
Well, they basically said, look, federal maritime law,
Got it.
it needs to be the guiding principle here.
Okay, yeah.
And they emphasize that you need consistency and predictability in international shipping.
Especially with so many countries
Right?
involved.
Exactly. Imagine if each state had different rules, it would be a mess.
A logistical nightmare.
Exactly.
So, how did they interpret that Himalaya clause in this specific case?
They said the language in the ICC Bill of Lading
Yeah.
was broad enough to cover Norfolk Southern.
Even though there was no direct contract.
Right, even without that direct contract with Kirby.
So even though Kirby didn't sign anything with Norfolk Southern, they were still bound by those limitations.
Yeah, and I know it seems kind of backwards.
It does.
But the court was really focused on the practical side of things.
The practicality.
Of international shipping. Think about, I mean, having cargo owners sign separate contracts with every single company.
Oh, yeah. That would be a nightmare.
It would be chaos, right? Every trucking company, every rail line, every port operator.
Yeah, totally. It would just slow everything way down.
Exactly. And the court saw the Himalaya Clause as a way to streamline that whole process.
So it lets the intermediaries, like ICC in this case, sort of negotiate on behalf of the cargo owner?
Exactly. Keep those goods moving.
That makes sense from an efficiency standpoint, I guess. But what about fairness? You know, for Kirby.
You're right. It does raise that question.
They're stuck with limitations that they didn't directly agree to.
Right.
Did the court address that at all?
They did. They pointed out that cargo owners aren't completely powerless.
Okay.
They can still take action if they feel like those limits are insufficient.
So what can they do?
They can go after the intermediary, the one who negotiated the terms.
Ah, okay. So there's still some recourse.
Exactly. So there is a system of checks and balances in a way.
Yeah. I mean, you're trusting the intermediary to look out for your best interests.
Right.
But you also have that option to, you know, go after them if they don't.
Exactly. Yeah.
Still, it's a lot to keep in mind.
It is.
For businesses involved in shipping.
Oh, yeah. This case really exposes just how complicated things can get.
It really highlights all the hidden complexities behind these, you know, seemingly simple shipping arrangements.
Absolutely.
And it just underscores the importance of understanding all those contract details.
Oh, absolutely.
Particularly those liability limitations.
Especially those, yeah.
It's not enough to just glance at the contract, right?
No. You really need to dig in and understand all the implications.
For every party involved.
Yeah, potentially every single one.
So if we kind of zoom out a bit, what's the big picture takeaway from Kirby? What should businesses and legal professionals be thinking about?
Yeah, it really makes you think twice, you know?
Always
you can't just assume that everything's going to be okay just because you're working with someone you trust.
Nope. Kirby is a perfect example of that. Due diligence all the way.
Cargo owners need to be really careful about who they're working with.
Right.
Making sure those contracts really protect them.
Yeah, it's a chain reaction, right?
It is.
Understanding your own contract isn't enough.
Yep.
You got to understand what your partners are agreeing to as well.
Exactly. And Kirby really reinforces how important that federal law is.
Right.
It's the framework.
The backbone.
Keeps things consistent and predictable.
Yeah. Otherwise, it'd be chaos.
Yeah, total chaos.
So much going on behind the scenes.
Oh, tons.
To keep those ships moving.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Okay, so big picture. When we look back at Kirby, what are the lasting implications?
Well, it really solidified the power of those Himalaya clauses, at least in U.S. law.
Okay.
It really clarified how they shield subcontractors in international shipping.
So is this like a win for logistics companies?
I mean, in a way, yeah, it gives them more certainty, right?
Yeah.
They know those liability limitations will likely hold up, even without those direct agreements.
Okay. But it also kind of puts the pressure on cargo owners, right?
Yeah.
To be more, I don't know, proactive.
Absolutely.
You can't just assume you can sue a subcontractor if something goes wrong.
Nope.
You really got to be on top of those liability limits.
Yep.
And if you're not happy with them, you got to address it up front.
Right.
So it's all about risk management at the end of the day.
It is.
Understanding the ins and outs of these contracts.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating, right?
Yeah.
This whole interconnected global system.
I think Kirby leaves us with a really interesting question, though.
Okay, what that?
What would you do differently if you were Kirby?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Knowing what you know now.
Yeah, it really makes you think.
It does.
About contracts, about risk.
Especially in a world where, you know, goods are constantly on the move.
Yeah.
Crossing borders.
Legal boundaries.
It's wild.
It really is. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, keep those contracts close.
And those legal minds even closer.
We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.